All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NBA podcast for Friday, December 23rd. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
James Davis.
Oh, he said it better the first time around than I had to redo it.
I'm not going to redo my joke. That's not authentic.
No, you're good like that. I like your authenticity, and everyone really, 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 really appreciates it. We're from we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head over to the site and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. It calculates optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. You can get it free for 3 days, and then just $29.95 a month after that. You're all set to go. It includes our NFL projections as well. We also have an NFL podcast. Today we released the one where we break down every single game on this week's NFL slate, so please go check that out. And all right, we're going to talk about a full Friday of basketball today. I think every single team in the league is playing. This is going to be the all caveat podcast because there's a bunch of just outstanding injury news that really will affect the just sort of how value creeps to the surface today. So we'll make note of some of the different things you need to kind of pay attention to leading into lineup lock today, because there are, I would say that, I mean, considering every single team is playing, that stands to reason there's going to be a lot of like outlying issues. It does seem like today there are maybe more than usual, though maybe I'm just kind of making that up. All right, let's talk about point guard to start. So there's a couple, so I'll start it off with the point guard thing here. I think Kevin Love is going to play tonight. And he sat out the first, he sat the last two games because of injury, but it really appears like he's going to play. If he weren't to play, do you think you would want to be able to roster Kyrie against Brooklyn tonight?
Yeah, I mean, Kyrie put up a pile, obviously, in their last contest. He was also really highly owned. I think he was around 35 to 40% owned, put up 54 fantasy points. Definitely a guy who's going to want to be under radar, because in a good matchup with Brooklyn, like, yeah, I get that there's blowout risk there, but I think he is less susceptible to blowout risk than some with Love out, because he's just going to have the ball in his hand so much. I mean, the fact that he had 31 and 13 against Milwaukee leads him to believe that he's just a huge part of the plan right now.
Yeah, there's no line in that game right now, so I think Vegas is waiting on that Love news as well. So, I mean, the Nets hung for a while with the Warriors last night. I mean, they were able to just kind of shoot so well that they were able to kind of stick in the game. Draymond didn't play, which probably affected some of the Warriors' fluidity. But Brooklyn, they're a feisty team at times, but generally pretty bad. After Kawhi, and I said Kawhi would get a downtick in our system, and really for you too, if Love were to play as well. So I just want to keep reiterating that. All right, so the big news here, the big guy here is Westbrook, right? Okay, so Westbrook, the sites are finally kind of making you pooper get off the pot with him in terms of what his pricing is. I don't want to get us that tag on iTunes.
How about you go? Maybe the sites are making you think about it. They're making you.
Well, I wanted to give the visual without the cursing.
Well, the visual is terrible.
I wanted to give the visual without the cursing. Don't tell me to produce my art. All right, so the Westbrook is 12, getting really close to 13,000 on FanDuel and on DraftKings. While I pause and look this up, he's 12.7. So at what point, he plays the Celtics tonight, they're like league average against point guards, at what point is it just too expensive to play Westbrook?
Well, so you're wondering when the crux of the pooping versus getting off the pot
happens.
I'm not really sure. I mean, it's obviously all matchup dependent.
Yep.
And I mean, the weird thing about Westbrook is being able to get, you know, roughly 5x points per dollar on any amount usually makes a guy a strong consideration. And when you can just lock up the top end of your lineup, it's interesting because, you know, in a lot of ways paying up for a big money guy decreases your flexibility. But what Westbrook allows you to do, especially on big nights like this, is allows you to just basically take all the punts you want. Like, you don't have to essentially spread your risk out among several reasonable $7,000 plays. You can take like all the guys who are just going to get a bunch of minutes randomly and Westbrook, and then you're feeling pretty good for yourself. Like, the reason stars and scrubs hasn't worked in the past actually oftentimes isn't because of the bad scrubs, it's because of the bad stars relative to their price. And so given that he allows you to do that, we might not be on the upper end of it just yet. I mean, I can see playing him up to, I mean, 13 is not too far away here on FanDuel anyway, but I don't know. 13.5 sounds like too much to me. That's just a gut test thing, though, because we just really have no experience with players in that category.
Yeah, it really is. He's just a total outlier case at this point in terms of like what his production is. Obviously the triple doubles are, you know, were well documented. Really, everything about him is well documented at this point. So I'm not saying anything necessarily new, but Yeah, it's just really a price thing. It's going to depend. It's a big slate. You know, it stands to reason cheaper plays will come in because just not every single team's going to be able to run at full strength. Just that's just not how the NBA works. So that will be probably that will be one of the bigger decisions going into tonight. Is at what point do you can think about fading him? Because he's this impossible guy to fade in terms of like your own mental sanity, right? Like you can do it like
Yeah.
mathematically or whatever, but your mental sanity of watching those games of where he, you know, comes into the beginning of, like if it's a close game and they bring him off the bench in the fourth quarter, like early, and you're like, well, 12 more minutes of this, you know? So if you're staring down the barrel at that can be it cannot feel great. After Westbrook, you know, where else can we kind of look for point guard tonight? Is there any other value? I mean, especially too if we just kind of went like upper tier, but not all the way up to Westbrook. Who are some other guys we can take a look at?
Well, I think the guy playing against Westbrook might be a good place to start. OKC has had a tough time defending opposing point guards this season. I think because Westbrook has assumed such a huge offensive burden, bottom five team in the league at defending opposing point guard position. And that's, you know, anytime you can get a, actually, yeah, so bottom seven team. They've improved recently, it looks like. But anytime you can get a situation like that, you at least want to look at the guy who's squaring off against him. And, you know, Thomas has been excellent since coming back from injury. You know, got off to a somewhat of a slow start and then ramped up to a 62-point game against Memphis and, of course, a 43-point game against Indiana. So, I like Thomas quite a bit tonight.
No, I agree with you. I like him. He looked pretty good last night. You know, sometimes you won't hit the upper end of those minutes because they'll play some kind of tighter rotations. The other guy to consider, he kind of burned some people last night, was Dragic. He plays the Pelicans tonight. Pelicans are a very bad defense. The Lakers really aren't that good of a defense, too. Dragic did struggle last night, which was annoying because it seemed like just about everyone else on the Heat was good. And he just like sort of just couldn't get it done, really couldn't get it going in the first. I don't think he even scored a basket in the first quarter, which was pretty maddening. So, but I think you can go back down the well again. The price didn't really move at all. New Orleans is kind of just in that same class of bad defense, played somewhat of a faster pace this year. I think Dragic, and I think Dragic's performance last night will turn people off to him a little more than they should. So, I don't mind heading back to Dragic. The other guy to consider too, if Exum and Hill were, well, Hill I think is definitely out. If Exum were to sit and Hood we're out again. I think Shelvin Mack is a guy, not a huge ceiling guy, but if he's going to sit play 30 to 35 minutes against the Raptors, I mean, is that he's 4,000 on FanDuel? Is that just cheap enough to kind of wing in a prayer with a guy who he's not like a huge usage guy for Utah, though I do think his last game was the floor of what you can expect to see in 35 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I with a guy like Mack, it's always tricky because on one level, he's sort of the punt you're looking for because, you know, getting a guy at 4,000 who's going to play 34 minutes from time to time is obviously quite a good deal. On the other hand, like, you know, going into tonight, I might be looking to do better in the punts just because there's so many games on the slate. So he's a kind of punt that you'll put in there, you know, reluctantly if the rest of the lineup just looks excellent, but probably not the guy you're building your lineup around. You know what I mean? So I don't mind him at all. You know, several good track record of paying 5x points per dollar minus the one disappearing act against Golden State. And, you know, last night, the fail state of 19 fantasy points on 4,000 is really not that bad, right? That
No.
puts you on pace for just less than 300 fantasy points, which, you know, maybe doesn't get there on a big cash game or on a big cash game slate tonight, but oftentimes does. So. Yeah, I like Mac too.
Spent a lot of time on point guard because shooting guard is going to be pretty quick. It stinks. Shooting guard is. I was sending Brad Holda, who's been writing some of our NBA picks, really doing a great job. I was sending him over some thoughts on shooting guard last night, and my basic thought was question mark, question mark. Hope you have some ideas, question mark. So, yeah, it's really funny to look at a lit. Well, it's not funny. It's interesting to look at a full game, a full slate of games. Basically every single shooting guard in the whole NBA is playing tonight, and I cannot really identify some crazy like lock it up value. Now, a couple
That's
guys,
pretty funny.
what's that?
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. If Howard were to not play again tonight, this is one of the other caveat pieces. If Dwight Howard were to not play and Korver got the start again because they go super small without him, I think you can consider him, but that's really only Dwight Howard dependent. After him, and I'm not even feeling so great about him either, so because like his, I know he was great last week where we were kind of patting ourselves on the back. Because he had just had this amazing like four total outlier four block game, and then he just didn't do anything the second. I think you called me. You're like, are you watching this Korver performance? And I was like, yeah. And then I think
so disgusting.
after that phone call, I don't think he scored another fantasy point. So
He did, and then he gave it back with turnovers. So he actually finished with 0.8 more fantasy points than he
bang.
did at that moment.
Gary Harris is a guy, he really, I probably will feel okay with Harris. Now, he only played 18 minutes against the Clippers. It was a weird game. They kind of did reverted back to the Denver thing where they just, you know, don't trust their starters anymore. And the game was got a little bit out of hand. Before that, he had played 31, 30, and 34 minutes. Do you think that his minutes are safe in like the 32 to 34 range against a team like Atlanta?
I do. I do think that Clippers game, it had a weird game script, but, you know, basically none of the starters on either team played the fourth quarter. So I think that you can play Harris tonight. Atlanta, obviously not nearly the team that Golden State is. And while maybe there's some blowout risk, I think that's actually, it's certainly mitigated if Dwight Howard doesn't play, because if both teams are just going to play small and race up and down the court, then I think Harris fits right into that mold. You know, Harris not spectacular defensively. I don't think Atlanta punishes him too much for that. So, you know, that gives him a greater opportunity to stay on the floor. I think Harris, you know, again, you can never think about these guys in a vacuum, because you have to compare them against, first of all, the other options at the position and the other options elsewhere. And so tonight, I'll put it to you, you know, it looks like Harden and DeRozan both have terrible matchups against Memphis and Utah. But what about Giannis against Washington?
I think Giannis is, you know, the system really doesn't like him at all, which is interesting. At 10-4,
doesn't the system like Giannis?
Yeah, are you chatting? Are you channeling like an inner chatter? Yeah, I have to go back and look. So Giannis is a weird one, right? Because when you use, you know, so when you use defensive versus position multipliers, which is not the only thing we use to determine like how good you are in a certain situation, but Giannis, so some guys just get different labels. So like it's weird he's just not a guy that fits the mold. Like you almost can't use that for a guy like him. So I'll go back and double check why. Almost nothing we would do to him would put him in. Like he's 4.5 points per dollar at 10-4 right now. That's just not. No matter what the multipliers are going the other way would be, it's not going to boost him. It wouldn't even boost him like above probably the points per hour you're getting on Harden against Memphis, which says probably more about Harden than it does about Giannis. But I think it's probably just too much to pay for him. And it's going to be weird because I know they are expected to put up a decent amount of points. He's a guy I'll probably end up double checking about. Back to Gary Harris for a second. You know, he's a guy that if Denver's smart in close games, they kind of need his defense out there, especially if Atlanta's going to go small. So I think I am feeling pretty safe with his minutes. Josh Richardson's another guy. He played decent minutes last night. He is the starter. He actually ran a lot more point guard, and I don't know if this affected Dragic's overall performance last night, but there were times where Dragic was basically the two guard and Richardson was the point guard when they shared the court together, which I thought was interesting, and that ultimately decreases some of Dragic's usage. Richardson, 4-for-11 from the field, not bad. I mean, not a bad game, not great, but he played 37 minutes, and I think he'd be in line for it again. Do you think considering his price, like, do you think what we saw last night from him is like sort of his floor at 37 minutes, or we just can't really expect too much else out of him?
Yeah, I think that given the current lineup construction, I do believe that's something like his floor. I mean, the tricky thing in evaluating Richardson for me is that a lot of his run as a starter earlier came with no Winslow. And Winslow is weird, too, because, you know, his shots per game have doubled this season somehow. And it's not like he's been shooting badly. So it's like, you know, is Spoelstra going to continue to trot him out there and just keep letting him shoot a bunch of shots at 30% or whatever? I don't know what to make of Richardson just because we don't totally have enough precedent for this exact current lineup construction. I will say that he'll have the minutes. I'm just not sure if he does enough with those minutes to justify prices going forward. That said, 4,200 is nothing, so it doesn't take a lot. You know, it's a rare player that can play 37 minutes and not pay a $4,000 price tag, although, you know, shooting guards are usually the top candidates in that category. your Courtney Lee's and your Tony Allen's and guys like that. So, I'm still in wait-and-see mode on Richardson. I do think the floor is high enough to where, you can keep getting away with it. And again, on a big slate like this, I'm not going to hope to wind up there by the time lineup's locked in.
Let's take a small forward. You know, you mentioned Winslow. He put up a monster last night. He looked great. Yep. They played him a ton of minutes. He's so versatile for them that he's versatile and he's young, and if he can just stay not injured, he just has such a high minutes floor. He played just about the entire game last night at 42, put up a 23-13. I don't think you can expect him to go 10-for-16 again. He got to the lane a lot, and he got a lot of just easy kind of buckets, just getting to the lane over and over again. But these minutes, I don't think many other small forwards have that kind of just kind of minutes floor almost that he has. Is he a must play in cash games at this point on DraftKings? I mean, excuse me, on FanDuel.
Yeah, I mean, it's he's not a guy that I'm going to want to call a must play really ever on creeping up to 5,000. I mean, I think the thing about Winslow is that he's going to be hugely matchup dependent going forward. And that is a good thing and a bad thing, right? Being matchup dependent means that you are a good value when you have a good matchup and you're a bad value when you don't. Now, New Orleans certainly qualifies as a good matchup. You know, they play bad defense. They, you know, play relatively fast. And you know, for a guy like Winslow, like really what he needs is to be able to get away from his defender and shoot kind of uncontested shots, because he really is just like kind of a world-class bad shooter. Even with the 63% shooting last night, 37% on the season is terrible. And it's really hard for teams to continue giving 13 shots a game to people who shoot at that rate. 22% from three. Like, he's just a bad shooter.
And it's not and it's not like run bad. It's not like Wes Matthews run bad, right? Like, this is like, this was a concern with him coming out of college that he couldn't shoot. So it's like, it's...
Yeah, he's a defense first guy. And now he's shooting 13 shots a game until he won't be, when someone's like, homie, stop shooting. You can't shoot.
Right.
You know? And so I don't know if he'll wind up there or not, right? Like, I mean, it's certainly possible. Like, we've seen plenty of players, like Kawhi Leonard, for instance, develop an offensive game around their excellent defense. And so maybe that's where it's headed with Winslow, or maybe that's, you know, that's the type of player they need him to be for him to really round into a guy who's like a franchise level player at some point. And so they're fine being patient with it. But I'm not sure. I'll say this. The matchup is good enough tonight that it would be hard to, and coming off the performance last night, it'll be hard to imagine him not being a chalk game for cash, or a chalk play for cash games. Mm-hmm. I don't know that you'll want to play him the game after that. I haven't looked at the matchup, but that's kind of how I'm feeling on him right now.
No, I'm with you. A couple of caveat notes on small forward before we talk about some of the bigger guys. If Dwight were to sit again, I think Bazemore is interesting. He's been playing a decent amount of minutes with a fairly significant, not significant usage, but good enough that he can kind of get you there. He also contributes in a lot of different ways. I feel much better about him if no Dwight. Then I, especially because of the rebounding piece of it. But
when he's interesting for him, the rebounding, you know, will go up a little bit, and so will the defensive stats. He's been covering fours on the defensive end, and and that's led to, you know, just these kind of sneaky little upticks in value that, you know, we've talked about this many times before too, but the sneaky upticks in value that create a better whole player, which, you know, chip in across a bunch of categories, and all of a sudden you're paying value easily.
The other two guys that kind of carry that little caveat tag are Luol Deng and Brandon Ingram. Julius Randle didn't play last night because his wife had a baby, and so he took the game off. I'm unclear what the paternity leave policy is for the Lakers, if it's a one-game or a two-game paternity leave, but he's questionable for tonight. We actually might not know about that. It's a West Coast game. So, but I think both of those guys would be in consideration. I would be more comfortable probably with Deng than Ingram. You know what? I take that back. It's a 7 o'clock game. I didn't realize that. So we will know. They play Orlando at 7. So I think I feel much more comfortable with Deng at the minutes. Ingram kind of played a ton of minutes last night. Didn't do much, although I think that might be a little bit of an outlier for him. So those two guys are some you can kind of take a look at that as you get information. And my bad, I had actually misread this note about Dwight, about him being out tonight. I thought that the note was going the other way, or for the previous game, he's out tonight. So that actually changes my opinion here about Bazemore and Thabo. Those guys probably stand to see a decent amount of run against the Denver team that can trend a little big if they want to, but they're not so big that Atlanta's gotten away with these small ball lineups enough in the short term that I think that you see decent minutes out of those two guys tonight, which then leads me to power forward with Millsap. So with Millsap, how much does Dwight's absence tonight change our thoughts on, like, Millsap with Dwight, Millsap without Dwight? Like, how does that change your thought process for his, like, kind of floor and safety in this matchup?
Yeah, I mean, well, it does a number of things. So first of all, I think it gives him a ton of safety around his minutes in particular, because, you know, we were watching a game the other night and they had Bazemore at the 4 and Millsap at the 5, the Hawks, and they'd bring Muscala in to spell people for a bit. But again, Muscala's not really a classic rim protector. Millsap's a good enough defender that he can hang with the Denver front court. I mean, they obviously feature a handful of guys that can really punish opposing teams if they can't defend the spot well, but the Hawks don't really have a choice, right? Like, it's going to be Millsap and then some combination of Muscala, Bazemore, and the rest. So, yeah, I think the minutes are there for Millsap almost assuredly, and given that Dwight's not there to jump and steal everyone's rebounds, I think that the double-digit rebounds, not that they're a sure thing, but they're a very, very strong thing. So I think he's an excellent play tonight. He's already been paying, you know, 5.5x points per dollar. Pretty decent matchup against Denver, who plays a relatively fast pace. So, yeah, I suspect you'll see Millsap across the industry tonight.
Yeah, he gets like that the rebound and usage bump, like you said, and going the other way too. Without Howard, how does that change your opinion on a guy like Jokic, who is kind of a foul trouble you know, just problem on a night-to-night basis. And, you know, we've seen it the last couple, three games. He started four games so far. He's played 20, 19, 38, and 20 minutes. Now, some of that's foul trouble. Some of it was the little bit of the blot and against the Clippers. But against a no Howard front court, is Jokic safe? I want to call the guy safe when I thought he was starting, and then he got nuggeted, you know, which is what sure. which is what happens to these guys. So what do you think about Jokic?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I don't look at Jokic and see safety for me. I mean, the fact that he can just play between 19 and 38 minutes and he's 7,000 means to me that it's going to be tough to call him anything other than a high-risk, high-reward play. I mean, the reward's through the roof. Like, if he just goes out there and doesn't get into foul trouble, like, say he doesn't have to cover Millsap on the offensive end, because, by the way, that the Hawks will pound the ball down into Millsap as well, and he's a clever enough offender that, you know, the guy like Jokic would just, it's his worst nightmare, right? Just right. like doing these pump fakes, getting him into foul trouble, getting him out of the game. That being said, Jokic could just put up a huge night. Like if Bazemore is rotating over him, Jokic will get every single rebound. So it's a weird one to evaluate for me. The floor might be high enough just given what he could even do in 22 minutes or whatever that maybe you just play him here, but I can't say I'm feeling great about it. How about you?
The price is almost too expensive for the risk that he plays 20 minutes.
I think so too.
And like, and that is just a real thing at this point. Like you can't look at 3 out of 4 games as starting it and think that he played and just lock him up for 30 minutes. It's just not the, it's, and it's not like Denver plays fast and loose with these rotations also. So it seems like he should play a lot, but I don't know the price. If he was 5,000, we wouldn't even be talking about it, right? But 6,700 just makes it, really does put you in that risk zone. It'll be interesting to see what other people do. This is something I'll kind of read some more industry stuff and just see like where people's thoughts on this are. I know my thoughts are it's too risky, but look, I thought Thomas Robinson was too risky last night too. People didn't have a problem playing him, even though he had, you know, multiple DNP CDs. I'm not exactly sure about how other people view these kinds of situations. Jabari Parker is another interesting guy. So you have Jabari Parker at 6,800 and Jokic at 6,700. You have to play Parker if you're choosing between those two guys, right? Like, for pretty much the same price.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, because if you're going to get, sure, Jokic is obviously better on a points per minute basis, but the risk is so much more severe. And, you know, the fast paced game script in Washington or in Milwaukee against Washington, I wouldn't hesitate to play Parker over him at the same price right now.
Yeah, one other interesting guy to consider possibly at power forward tonight is Aldridge. So Pau Gasol is not going to play tonight. Aldridge does see a usage bump when Gasol is not on the court. So, and it's not significant. It's enough to be noticeable, right? He sees a usage bump and a rebounding bump somewhere in like the 6 to 10% range, somewhere around there for each one. So, because I'm running a regression calculation on that, so I'm just not looking at the exact one, but it's a bump on it. That being said, Aldridge has also been bad. I don't know. What do you think? Like, where does a guy like Aldridge stand for you in terms of the, you know, Portland's a really good matchup for power forwards. He sees a bump with no Gasol. Mm-hmm. He's been okay. I got, you know, he was bad last night, but I guess he'd been kind of okayish before. Is he like a guy that strikes you as kind of safe in this matchup?
I do like Aldridge, actually. I mean, you know, yes, it didn't work out last night, and I recommended him then. So what do you want me to do? I'm not perfect, I guess. But I do like him, and I think it's for a couple of main reasons. I mean, you highlighted the first piece. The fact that Pau isn't going to play again tonight does free up a lot of space down low. And I think the other piece, you know, and it didn't, again, wind up working out this way last night, but when the games stay close, Aldridge will play more minutes. He can play high 30s minutes. And the fact that he's only 6,500 leads me to believe that, you know, he's still a pretty reasonable play as long as the matchup isn't too bad. And given that Vegas doesn't necessarily see this as a blowout, I think Aldridge gets there. I mean, if this game is really going to be a two-point game the way they picture it, and, you know, Aldridge is still a huge part of the team. I mean, some foul trouble last night obviously kept him off the court, but if that doesn't happen, I think he winds up paying his value and then some. And I actually think he's an excellent play, and it seems like a great opportunity to buy low on a guy whose price will go up if he maintains what I believe to be kind of this baseline opportunity and both on the offensive end and just in terms of minutes in general.
All right, let's finish it off with center. You know, we're getting a little more clear sense of what the Sixers are trying to do, sort of when they have Okafor and Embiid. They're starting together, but then they really don't play them that many minutes together, and they kind of rotate them back and forth on the court. Where do you see guys like this? Okafor is a little less expensive. He's only 5,200 on FanDuel. Played 25 minutes last game. Not a crazy amount of minutes, but almost got there in terms of price. Embiid's a guy who our projection might be a little bit high on him, considering some of like what he was doing in the early season that hasn't kind of kept up. He only played 25 minutes last game. Where do you see these guys in terms of safety?
Yeah, I mean, I see them both in kind of the same light, and it's a light that often many players wind up finding themselves in, which is they're good plays in the right matchups and not good plays in other matchups. Like Embiid was on a tear where you could play him at say 6,000 against anybody and be reasonably sure he would pay off. Now that he's 7,200, the bar obviously goes up quite a bit, and you know he's basically looks like Nikola Jokic right now, and that's not necessarily where you want to be for 7,200. That said, the Suns, you know, both the combination of them playing a fast pace and playing poorly in general means that both of these guys should be in consideration for tonight. If I had to pick one just in terms of overall safety, I'd probably go with Okafor just because he's demonstrated a higher floor specific to his price. I mean, he's 2,000 less than Embiid right now, so right. I would specify him in terms of overall safety, but I do believe that you still can't argue with the upside of Embiid. If everything clicks and you know he just happens to be the guy who's getting all the things down low, like obviously he has 50 fantasy point upside, and that's pretty unusual on a $7,200 salary.
No, I think I'm with you. Neither one excites me for the price necessarily, but center as a whole just kind of looks weird. I think you can probably go Whiteside again against New Orleans. The minutes,
I think that'll be probably where it winds up for me.
Yeah, the minutes should still be there. He's been playing with aggressiveness lately, which you want to see out of him because you just get a little bit worried about the attitude, all things considered. But another guy too, Robin Lopez was a guy. We played him last time.
I'd be happy to hear his voice.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, the system's never seen a lineup that didn't want to put Robin Lopez in. Well, it's funny about him, too. I think, played 33 minutes last game and it was looking pretty good for the first half and then kind of disappeared. I would have no problem going back there again. He can get there enough in terms of just, especially with the rebounds, if his minutes are there. And I do think the minutes will be there for him tonight. It's not going to feel great because the recent game log just looks pretty brutal. But against a Charlotte team that doesn't have ton. I mean, Zeller's fine enough, I guess. Not something I really worry about. They'll rotate in Hibbert, and then again, not really a guy I'm worried about. So I don't mind Lopez for the price. I think you've seen a price drop on him mostly because weird minutes rotations because of blowouts, and then a bad game last game against Detroit. And I totally get that no one wants to see Robin Lopez in a lineup. So that's, believe me, it's not lost on me. All right, buddy. I actually threw out in our chat. We have a live chat room up on the site. And I asked if anyone had any questions for the podcast as we went on, and a couple of people did. I'm gonna read you the questions.
Whoa.
I have not pre-fed James these questions, so this is all organic, baby. So the first question is,
answer anything offensive. That's it. I'm drawing a line right there.
Well, you know what I was gonna say. I was gonna say our chatters, and then I said our chatter, so it could be offensive, but I won't ask you anything offensive. All right. So one of them is Chris Chung. He's a big time chatter. He's
sure.
Yeah. This guy's, we love this guy. He's in
he's
there a lot.
He's just Chung to me, Doug.
Yeah. Would you ever run the optimal with only the highest Vegas projected game? So you know we have filters on the site that you can run by just kind of how games projected. So I guess what he's asking is, when you look at those high implied totals. So tonight would be, the examples of those games tonight would be, I guess, Spurs and Portland is kind of up there. Denver and Atlanta is 221. And I don't know, another one would be like Washington, Milwaukee. Let's say those are like the three highest implied total games of the night. Would you run only the optimal in terms of cash games just with that as sort of the filter?
Well, I like where the thinking is at there, because oftentimes Vegas will be able to suss out where most of the points are going to be scored. I would caution against it for a couple of reasons. First of all, Vegas has different priorities than we do, right? And the fact that they want to project totals, yeah, they definitely want to get as close as they can so the money comes in evenly on both sides. But there's other little considerations like, you know, is this team a public team, the home road thing, you know, just other little factors that move lines just a little bit to where you don't want to take them as gospel, particularly when things are close. Like it's one thing if you get Golden State and Cleveland or something and it rates to be a close game and it's a huge total. That's kind of separate from what I'm talking about, which is, just kind of generically the teams with the highest total. And second of all, I think the other, and this is actually the bigger factor, is that a lot of these teams with high totals just don't have good, predictable fantasy commodities to put in there. And you really want to look on the player level for DFS. Sure, the team level is important, obviously, but take a team like Brooklyn or Denver or, you know, just any of these teams, the Lakers, whose guys play really erratic minutes. Mm-hmm. Sure, you might be able to cherry pick a few excellent plays from them, but you're not just going to be like, yeah, this is it. The Spurs, Portland, the 210 total, just going to put all these guys in there and hope for the best, or Denver, Atlanta. Like, it just doesn't work that way, unfortunately. So I think it's actually a decent thing to go for like blending high totals and close spreads if you want to go for big tournament upside. Close spreads also have a nice correlation with hitting overtime and all that sort of thing. So I think, you know, I love thinking creatively, thinking outside the box. If you're playing cash games, though, you just want to go straight value. You don't worry about just trying to jam guys home from any specific game.
And a lot of times, you know, at least our system will suss a lot of that out. Like we've discussed a decent amount of Denver and Atlanta guys already, you know, or, you know, we made mention of a couple Spurs. So I think sometimes it will just kind of work out. Where I think lines are good to use is where teams, and we've mentioned this at other times during the season, but is a line on a team relative to its own average line, right? So like if typically the Jazz are, you know, on an average league night, they are projected to put up 95 implied points, and now they're playing the Lakers and it's 102. Well, now theoretically you're getting value on the Jazz, right? Now they might not have the highest overall line of all the teams that are going that night, like if, you know, Houston's playing somebody, but they're priced as if they're a 95 point team going in, and now they're 102 or something. You know what I mean? So I think that's where you can really, that's where I think lines become really, really helpful. And most systems are going to be able to figure that out because it's going to say, hey, you know, Gordon Hayward against the Lakers, that's a good play or something like that. So, you know, I think that's where I...
No, that's an excellent point. And damn it, your point was much better than my point, which is it's always relative to their baseline. And that's absolutely spot on.
All right. Another question from also another big chatter, Mike Kesner. He wants to know, and I'm going to kind of rephrase this question because I think this is what the question means. Is it beneficial to hedge on larger slates? Like, so tonight, we look at the main slate of games for FanDuel and DraftKings. Every single team is playing. Is it better to run one cash lineup throughout, you know, the whole thing? Or is it better to maybe hedge a little bit on cash lineup? Like, what's your idea about hedging?
Yeah, so it all depends on your perspective and how important it is for your psychology, basically, to win more frequently and lose less frequently. So, you know, if you look at DFS or just your gambling history or your game of skill, history and future combined, you're going to have thousands of little decisions that essentially will hedge against one another, right? So let's say tonight, and you can do this tonight, by the way, like, you know, this is all going to circle back around in a second, but I think from just strictly a gambling perspective, when you're doing things like this, you want to try to figure out what your goals are. Is it to, you know, have a lower overall ROI or return on investment, but have more sanity around your swings? Or is it to simply maximize your expectation in the absolute long term? And I'll say that most people, unless you're just like a gambling robot who has a huge bankroll and is totally emotionally disconnected from winning, like to win more frequently, even if it means sacrificing a little bit of expectation. And when you look at our optimal lineups, you will see, like, you know, very, very close spreads between the top few lineups, let's say, on most nights. So a lineup projected to score 314.57 and 314.21 points, our projection system is saying these lineups are essentially the same. So I don't actually believe you're giving up any expectation necessarily by playing one over the other. So that being said, yeah, you can hedge across those lineups and reduce your variance. The strict, purest gambling perspective would tell you just play the best lineup each night and, you know, reduce your buy-in if you feel like you have too much exposure on any given night. But it's a long-winded answer of saying it probably doesn't matter too much what you do. Just do what works best for your sanity, if that's helpful at all.
Yeah, I think you put it pretty clearly there. Hedging is mostly about your how much you're willing to sustain mentally, right? Because if you were betting, you know, if you had $1 million and you were betting one, you would never hedge it between two 50-cent bets because you don't care, right? And so, it just really comes down to how comfortable you are mentally in terms of that's where I think all the hedging comes from. Now, I will say,
well, and I think too, it's okay for just to help DFS be more fun for you. If it's not fun 100%. To have all your guys riding on just one big lineup on a given night, don't do it. You know, like unless you're a DFS pro and this is how you're going to make your living, spreading out across the top five lineups or not. Like for me, I actually have less fun when I hedge more because I would rather have big wins and big losses. Like I don't know what it is about me. I feel more alive when that's happening.
All right. On that note, I think we'll cut it off for the rest of the day. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. You head over to the site, grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, which calculates optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NBA. That includes NFL projections as well. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. All right, we will be back again with Talking Basketball next Tuesday. All of you out there, enjoy the Friday of basketball. Enjoy a Sunday, Christmas Day, a full day of basketball, which should be a lot of decent games going there. Those are always really fun times to get some lineups in, kind of sweat throughout the day. We'll talk to you guys again on Tuesday.
Adios, y'all.